A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much. Welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books with Zibby. I'm the host, Zibby Owens. I am an author. My latest is blank, pub date March 1st, a novel. I'm also a podcaster, obviously, a publisher, a bookstore owner, and so much more. If you love books, you're in the right place. In fact, we call it the Zibbyverse, or really, the LA Times called it the Zibbyverse, and we're going with it. Go to ZibbyOwens.com to learn more and follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens. Amy Lynn is the author of Hereafter, a memoir. You can hear me smiling because Amy is the Zibby Books author of March. Her debut, Hereafter, comes out on March 5th, and she is a dynamo. Go to her Instagram, Literary Amy. Watch her videos on our Instagram at Zibby Books Publishing. Check her out. Her writing is exquisite. She has gotten 3-starred reviews in trades, which is like amazing. Most people don't get 1-starred review ever, like me. And her book is just absolutely sensational. You should stop what you're doing and go and read it. It's also the Book of the Month Club pick for March. So if that didn't convince you, anyway, it's amazing. And Amy is amazing. Okay, Amy Lynn is a writer and educator who lives in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. A recipient of residencies from Yaddo and Casa Comala, her work has been published in Plowshares. Hereafter is her debut memoir. Welcome, Amy. I am so thrilled that you're coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Hereafter, your absolutely beautiful memoir, or as you call it in the trailer, a memoir in vignettes, which we honestly probably should have called it. But anyway.
Thank you for having me. This is incredibly exciting.
So we had the unique experience of being early readers of this beautiful manuscript. So I feel incredibly privileged. Tell listeners what your book is about and how you ended up even coming to our publishing house. And then I want to dig into, you know, the grief and your own experience and the poetry that makes up this book and everything else.
Oh, thank you. So I wrote Hereafter in the years, the very first few years after my husband Curtis died in August of 2020. And it came out of a Substack that I started a month after Curtis died called At the Bottom of Everything. And I wrote in that for pretty much 2 years before I started thinking about if it was a book. And it really wasn't a book in the Substack, which is more of a personal notation or diary of some kind of grief as it happened to me. But I knew when I came to the book that it needed to be the essential parts of grief. And so I started making these very small text boxes in Word to help me narrow down what had been the really essential parts of my grief experience in that moment. And as I was doing that, it allowed me to process, okay, what is the narrative that I'm going to offer? And when I first sent it to my agent and said, okay, I think I now do have a book, it was very lean. I only wanted things on the page that I knew were going to be there. But I think just about everything that I sent her then is in the book as it exists now. But, you know, she was my agent, who's Catherine Fossett, is just amazing. She was like, before she'd read it, she said, this is not that long. You know, she literally on the page, it's not that long. And she said, it could be hard to talk to editors about why this project is so lean and why it's so concise. And I said, but that is the project. That's what grief is like. It is this black star. It compresses everything into it. And then, you know, I came to Zibi Books because of all of the editors that we spoke with, you, Zibi, because it was you and I who spoke, I heard in you that you understood the project, the heart of the project, and what it was trying to do. And it's really thanks to your vision and the team's vision now, who have advocated for the book as it's about to come out, that have introduced this book to the world in the way that was in my heart and that it was designed to be. And so I've ended up in the absolute right place for it because you were the person who saw it. Aww. As clearly as myself and my agent did.
Makes me want to cry. Well, I'm so honored because what there is to see is just pure beauty, honestly. It's
Thank you.
Really, really beautiful. And just to clarify what you said before, because the first time you said it, not in this conversation, but in another context, to me, I didn't totally understand what you were saying. In Microsoft Word, in the program, you can make little text boxes where it looks like a little square, and then you have to like shove all the words inside. And you literally took those boxes and filled them with words and took everything else away except for what fit in the little box in the middle of the page. I mean, that's a wild way to write.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, I don't recommend it. I would copy an entire page of text into this tiny box as big as an Instagram caption, though they're very long now, but like the classic kind of short Instagram caption. And I would just keep deleting sentence by sentence till I got to something that felt like the essential part of my grief experience. And then I would keep that and then I would keep going. And slowly these very condensed paragraphs began to emerge. And that was when I thought, okay, here's the book. It has announced itself. Yeah.
And tell a little more about how you lost Curtis and what happened and, you know, which period of time in particular you really document in the book.
Yeah. So Curtis died very suddenly when he was running a half marathon because his heart stopped for no known reason. And one of the sort of uncomfortable moments of that was not just that 10 days later, I would be hospitalized with life-threatening blood clots in my lungs and in my leg and in my upper vena cava, which kind of like in my stomach. But it was also the middle, or maybe not the middle, but the start of global lockdown. It was August of 2020, and everybody had been locked down for 4 months, essentially. And so we were also navigating my personal health failing, Curtis's death, and all of the logistics that go with that, as well as on top of that, you know, they could only let one person in the hospital with me, or, you know, at the funeral home, there was only so many people that could be in a room. These were just like other layers added on to this already really polarizing experience of grief. And that was partially why I needed, I think, to come to the page and clear white space around it, because there actually was, due to the coronavirus, a lot of space around me, like 6 feet of space. And it grief was isolating me and then my personal health was isolating me. And then the pandemic was also creating isolation for all of us. And I was plunged in kind of this macro and micro experience of being alone, which I think the very small paragraphs on the page, the way that they float suspended on the page, I think allows the reader to feel some of that physical experience for myself.
Oh my gosh. Can I read just like a couple of the pages from the beginning or something?
Yes, I would love to hear it.
Okay, so this is all that is on the first page. It just says one. The first time I see Curtis, I do not know who he is. I am in my car, paused by a pedestrian crosswalk. He passes in front of my vehicle. He is on his way to a blind date. I am on my way to a blind date. He wears a dark blue blazer. His legs are long, his body lithe and graceful. Why can't I ever meet a man like that, I think? He's gorgeous. Okay, and that's the entire page. And then the next page, and I'm not doing this justice because you can't see it and it looks so beautiful, but online, a post asks followers, what is one thing you wish other people knew about grief? I read the first 12 of over several hundred responses. It doesn't end. It won't stop. You think about it all the time. It never ends. It is always with you. It doesn't quit. It never goes away. It is exhausting. It is ever present. It is always there. No amount of time lessens the grief. It is forever. And then I'll just read the third little page, chapter, whatever. On our first date, June is melting into July. I do not wear a bra. Curtis tells me he is an architect. I tell him I am a substitute teacher. We both have unusually long hair, his grazing his shoulders, mine grazing my hip bones. His father is Japanese, his mother Ukrainian. My father is Chinese, my mother British. We walk through the city. He shows me how the soaring glass panels of the court building make it a gleaming part of the sky. He presses his face to the glass, gazes upward. I have been to court before, contesting a speeding ticket, but I thought nothing of the building. Seeing him love it is how I start to love it myself.
Thank you. What a beautiful reading.
Oh my gosh. You're so good. Like, it's immediately intriguing. You want to know your whole story. You want to know what happens. Where is the grief? What it like, just who are these people? How do they get together? I mean, it like, you can't not want to keep reading and discovering and learning. And already you feel like you're setting the rhythm, right? We're like feeling it. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. I think in a book like this that moves between past and present is entirely written in the present tense, which was a very specific choice because when you're in grief, everything is present tense. Your past life, which passes in an instant, the minute he died on the bridge, my life ceased to exist as it had, but I had no way of catching up to that. And so in grief, and the reason the book is in present tense is because my life as a wife, as Curtis's partner, as, you know, living with Curtis, felt as real, if not more real to me than my actual life. Mm-hmm. The life that was really my present didn't feel real to me. And so, you know, that's why it's in present tense. I've lost track of why I brought us here, what you were saying.
That's okay. No, that's but, great. No, the immediacy of it. And
it's so short because it's switching back and forth and you were saying, oh, you immediately understand the rhythm. And I think that's such a generous and beautiful thing to say because I think this is a book that does have to teach you how to read it. You have to be taught a little bit. This is how the rhythm is. This is quickly who these people are. And grief is kind of like that. You're immediately in it and you have to catch up to grief's rhythms. And again, I wanted that present for readers because it was so much a part of my own experience.
Well, interestingly, so much of the book that I would not have known had I not been the publisher, but I'll just share it because I do, because I am. You know, you have a very clear vision of how things should look, should be presented, the cover, the fonts, like everything. And it's so funny because people would say, like, we were talking about a social media post. Well, Amy really feels like it should look like this. And I was like, great, go with that then. Like, well, Amy would really like this, great, okay. Because you have like such an instinct. Not that the rest of us don't, but you have, like, your vision is so specific and it always ends up working like so well. So I don't know where it comes from. I mean, you're an English teacher. You're not a graphic artist. Like,
oh, not at all.
You know, you could be, but your brain just works in such a visual way, in an artistic way that, you know, even this book becomes an art project.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I think the credit truthfully is to Zibby Books for allowing me a seat at the table in a way that traditional publishing would never allow me to speak into different aspects of the book. And one of the joys of my life, I think there's this myth that writing and publishing is this very solo journey. That really hasn't been my experience. It's not my experience of grief either, that both practices, writing and grief, are best served when you are connected with community. Mm. And that has been my experience at Zibby Books and my experience with being allowed to share my vision for how the book would look or how it will move through the world visually or creatively has been that my writing and my publishing experience has only been enriched by working with other people who are just as willing to hear me as I am to hear them. And that's something I think that's really special about Zibby Books. And again, just reiterated to me that this book is in the right place. And I feel continually lucky that I'm allowed to even say this, I think this typeface would be amazing. And well, you really heard me.
Totally right. So, you know, maybe we should keep you on as some sort of artistic consultant. You can evaluate.
Listen, I would love to.
As you know, like Grasso designs a lot of our covers. So you never know what,
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Pull you up. No, I'm kidding. Okay. So back to the events in the book. When you lose Curtis, you mentioned already your own crazily timed health issue, getting stents and dealing with clots and having to go through all that, and your mother, and then, oh, by the way, and then your mom, like there's one point where you're talking about how you're so good in a crisis because your mom fell or something, she was bleeding everywhere, and you're like, okay, I'm good in a crisis. This is good to know, you know, like tuck that in my back pocket. Yeah. And then you just present us with like crisis after crisis and talk a little bit about that and that sort of fight or flight stepping up to the plate, but then having it all kind of fall apart later.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think exactly what grief taught me is when my mom was struck by a cyclist while we were running and sustained very, very serious injuries. I was extremely calm and processed it almost too well in the moment because nobody then wondered if I was doing all right. And then I had to like kind of work through that later. But then when my own health failed and when Curtis died, my instinct was to do the same thing, was to process it by myself, out of sight, without really asking anyone for help. And my therapist, who plays a very large role in the book, but an equally larger, if not even bigger, role in my own life, just said, you can't, that's not going to serve you here. And he said, you're not going to make this one alone. You have to connect to community. You have to find a way to ask for help. And I think there's a lot of language around grieving that asks grievers only to perform resilience or strength. You know, people get asked, you doing well? Or, you know, was the sunshine in LA beautiful? Which was something I was asked a year after Curtis died when I went to LA to cry by the ocean because I couldn't cope with my own emotions. But people kept wanting me to perform this resilience and this kind of strength, which is why I was good in a crisis, because that's all I'd ever been asked for, was to show strength. But when Curtis died, with the writing and with my therapist's encouragement, I began to show people that I was in so many ways helpless. And after my clot clearing surgeries, I literally couldn't walk without support. Like I had to have a walker. I had to rent one from one of those sort of medical supply centers because I couldn't walk unassisted. And that opened up for me, just as this book has, and as I hope the book will for other people, a place where people helped me. And I realized, oh my gosh, there's something really vulnerable and tender about allowing people to help you, and something that really moved me deeply and cracked me open in a lot of ways. And that is a direct legacy of Curtis, who helped me day to day. And I sincerely hope the book is a place where people are able to meet with their own pain and actually show people what it is, because people will help them. And that has been my experience. And I think it's really humbling and really hard to ask for help. And this book, in a lot of ways, is a way, hopefully, for other people to ask for help and to receive just a fraction, maybe even, of the help that I received after Curtis died and that Curtis gave me daily.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, "This is so exciting." So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, "Well, what should I spend my 2 cents on?" Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
There's also something about getting help. If you deny people the ability to give, to help you in some way, you're actually taking away part of their joy as well.
Yeah.
Like, people really like to feel needed. And when they help you, they feel like they are doing something. And otherwise, they feel like they can't do anything and they feel helpless as well. So it's almost like, our natural instinct is like, "I'm fine." I mean, I agree. Like, I'm always like, no, I'm fine. I can do this. Like, oh, I'll just do this. But as soon as someone does something, they feel so good about it, right? So it doesn't actually help the other person if you say, "Don't help me."
It doesn't. In so many ways, it doesn't. And that was my experience. My friend Katie, who's in the book, who walked with me every week for a year, despite having 2 small children and being a full-time educator, she said to me on one of our walks after Curtis died, "This is the first time in our like 15-year friendship where I've ever felt really close to you." Mm. She's one of my best friends. I said, "How can you not feel that way?" And she's like, "Well, you never needed my help before."
Mm.
And she felt it, a bond that already existed, but she really felt it because she's such a natural caregiver. And I needed her to take care of me. And it was really beautiful. And I think we got even closer because of that. And I'm so aware of how lucky that is, because there are lots of people who, even in my own life, have been unable to help me because of pain in their own lives. And you do have people who say, "Oh, I can't show up for you in that way." And that's really scary. But again, the more connected you are, the more you find people who surprise you and who show up in ways that you didn't expect. You know, one of my friends called me every single day for a year. And sometimes I would answer and sometimes I didn't, but I would never have expected that. And it was just something she did. It was beautiful.
Gosh, that also makes me want to cry. There are a lot of books about grief and loss out there. Why should someone read your book?
I would read my own book if you want to read something that's in pain and not about pain. I read tried to read a lot of books after Curtis died, looking for some kind of mirror for the pain that I was in. And I couldn't find it. I could find a lot of books about grief or about how to process grief or about the biological impact of grief on the brain. And all of those are beautiful resources. But I didn't want any of that. I wanted somebody to tell me that they had also been in this much pain. And that was all. I didn't want anything else. I just wanted someone to say, "Yes, I also had to hold this much pain. And yes, this also felt like it was going to destroy me." And I could find very little like that. And I also could find very little like that that I could actually read. You know, Hereafter is in these very short, fragmented paragraphs for the aforementioned reasons, but also because grieving people's ability to focus is basically zero, or at least mine was. And I needed something that I could come in and out of and carry with me. that I couldn't find. Even something as beautiful as Joan Didion's work on grief, I would just stare at a page and be completely lost in her beautiful prose. I couldn't process it. And so that was why I wrote the book the way that I did. And also just, it's so frankly about grief, because those were the things that helped me, was hearing people say, yeah, I'm in that much pain too. And there was something really, I think there is something really healing for grievers who are so often, as I've said before, asked to hide how much pain they're in, to just hear somebody say, yeah, part of being a human being is having to hold this much pain. And I understand that you're doing that. And that was what I brought to Hereafter. That was the guiding principle of it.
Oh my gosh. There is a whole sort of industry now around grief, people who help people through grief. And sometimes, you know, my husband Kyle and I were talking about it one night, like, what would their lives have been? Like, they wouldn't be grief counselors. They wouldn't be, you know, dedicating their lives, but they've sort of stayed in these moments. This has become their life's work, right? These moments. Do you feel like this has become your life's work? I know this is a book that we are talking about, but when you fast forward or you think about what you want the rest of your life to become, and I know you're this wonderful educator and you're, you know, obviously not, you know, myopic in your focus, but how much do you want this to define you for the rest of your life?
It's a really thoughtful question. I think that writing is my life's work in a lot of ways, but I also feel, whether I would like to accept it or not, and that's part of my journey with grief, is that being somebody who is a widow at, you know, then 31 and now 34, is that grief has become my life's work because it's chronic. My grief is not going to magically go away as much as some of the sort of power of positivity movement might like to suggest. I am going to be working through and on grief for the rest of my life. That is what love asks of us in the end. Somebody, if you don't happen to die at the same time as your partner or your beloveds, somebody has to carry the legacy of what it means to love somebody. And that does mean carrying the legacy of grief for the remainder of your life. That's what love costs. And I think it's painful for people to look at that, but that is the reality. And that is my reality. I will carry the beautiful legacy of our love and of my grief for my whole life. And so I sincerely hope that my grief does become bound into my life's work, because it means that I'll be able to carry the stories of other people and maybe even allow other people to carry theirs in slightly better ways. And that's maybe where my love of education and writing also finds its nexus, is a really deep desire to help other people bear witness to their own pain and to help the people around them bear witness to their pain. I really want to do that. I desperately want the book to connect with the people that need a mirror. And if I can be a small piece of that, if my life's work can be a small piece of that, that I think would be a legacy, maybe more than I deserve, truthfully.
Wow. That is beautiful. When you're relaxing, right? You're such an intentional person. You're so thoughtful and considered, even in the way you form sentences in a conversation, right? I'm like, I don't think I've heard anybody say the word nexus in a sentence and like ever. I don't know. That's so cool. And then in my head, I'm thinking nexus and like spelling it out and the, you know, five letters. How it's so symmetric.
It's a really pleasing word, you know.
I know. It's a great word. I'm going to try to use it in a sentence. You know, that'll be my goal for 2024. Anyway, no, I'll probably do it next week. Anyway, point is, you are such a thoughtful, considered person in how everything is. What do you do when you don't want to deal with any of that and you want to let it all go? Like, are there wild dance parties in your living room? Or like, how do you like just get out of that order in a way?
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to say thank you for being so affirming of the person that I am. I think I have a really intense life and my thoughtfulness is also born of a personal intensity, and I think sometimes it can get misconstrued in some ways. So it's really, it heals something in me to hear that you see it as thoughtful and as tender and as beautiful. And that's, I think that, thank you for giving that to me. That really moves me to hear. Uh-huh. Yeah. How do I regulate when I've taken on too much, which is me every day? Truthfully, I will usually do one of two things. I'll either paint my nails, which is something I've done my whole life, and immediately makes me feel just a little bit more relaxed. You can't do anything also if you're painting your nails other than just doing that because your hands are literally engaged. Or the best thing for me is I will go walk beside the water. That's the one of the best things. If I can run, if I have the energy, running is also really helpful. But that makes me sound far more committed to my mental health than I am. Truthfully, usually I'm staggering alongside the river, trying to take a deep breath. But that genuinely is it, is going and seeing a body of water and allowing it myself to remember that, you know, the surface of things hides all kinds of life and death, and that things continue. The river continues, you know, the water still runs, and I find something really grounding about that. And I genuinely do try to do that, because otherwise I do work a lot and I like to work, and I find that grounding in its own way as well.
And what other writing things are you doing now? Like, do you write for yourself at night? Are you writing a novel? I don't know about, like, tell me what else.
I am actually. So I'm writing a novel. I finished it last summer. I have two. I have one novel that I'm so behind on owing my agent edits to, but I did this novel. So I'm halfway through the second pass of tightening the bolts before my agent sees it. And then I'm also, because I'm on leave from teaching right now to support Hereafter coming out, I'm writing in my Substack again, which I love. I'm a child of the blog era. I had like seven different blogs as a kid. You know, it would literally be like, today for breakfast, I had cereal. And I would sit up like my mom as a child. I'm a child of the blog era. I love them. I love the Substack. I love the opportunity to write freely in a personal tone about what I'm thinking about. So I'm working on that as well, which feels really lovely. And then I'm writing some personal essays for a couple of different outlets. But largely, I'm really pushing on this second novel's edits because you feel excited about it. And I have the time to write right now, which is so precious to me.
Wow. Well, that is exciting. How do people find your Substack?
So it's at the bottom of everything at substack.com. Yeah, thank you. That's really generous of you to ask.
Oh, no problem. Anything that people might be surprised to learn about you?
I think people are always surprised that I'm taller than they think I am.
That's true. I was very surprised by that.
You know, I'm 5'10". I'm quite tall. And if you've only ever met me on Zoom, people, I tend to transpose their own height on me. They kind of assume I'm similar in their own height and then meet me and think, oh, you're so much taller than I realized. And I think also people would be surprised to learn that I am like quite a bit more tender than I can appear at first. You know, I have really big feelings and feel the world really intensely. But I think sometimes people see me working a lot and think that I'm kind of like a super person or don't have time for feelings. I'm too busy working. And the reality is I actually have, yeah, like a real deep tenderness that is something that Curtis saw in me. And I think comes across in the book. I think that's why I show up so fully in the book, is because it's through the lens of how Curtis saw me, which is as I am. And maybe not as I appear when I'm in work mode. And that's something really beautiful to have in the book too, is to offer the person that I am.
Wow. Amy, you are a special lady. I will say that. Oh. You really are. And Hereafter is just absolutely gorgeous. And I am honored to play a tiny role in this and can't wait to really...
This is much yours and
no,
mine.
No. Together. No, please, it really isn't. But I mean this sincerely. I'm eager to see the impact that you have. I feel like you're this, not storm sounds negative, but it's like, you know, there's like this weather system that's coming in that I know is coming. Like, I'm like the meteorologist in this situation here and you are the storm. And now I'm like, I can't wait to sit back and watch what happens when this thing hits. So that is how I feel at the moment.
That's so kind. I hope it connects with people. And like I said, one of the greatest gifts was that it connected with you and that you saw it, and that what a gift you've given me and all of the team that works on the book. I really feel that every day. It's amazing.
You're the best. So sweet. Amy, congratulations. It's just getting started.
So much. And thank you for having me. I absolutely treasure this opportunity to talk with you.
Me too. This made my day. Thanks.
You're the best.
Okay.
Bye. Take care.
You too. You're
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.